sense. That's
all right. We are moving on to principle number 10. Thank you all for coming. Hope everybody is doing well. I also hope that you're getting out a little bit now that the weather is warming up. We all need a change of scenery. I told my girls they need to just walk around the block. And they said, can we just drive? I said, no, go walk around the block. Okay. Principle number 10. Ani ma'amin be'emuna shalema. I believe with complete faith. Sha'borei yidbarach shemo. That God, blessed be his name, the creator. Yodea kol ma'ase b'nei adam. Knows all the actions, activities of mankind. V'chol machshavosam. And all of their thoughts. Shenemar, as the verse tells us, hayotzer yachad libam hameven el kol ma'aseim. He fashions their hearts all together. He comprehends all their deeds. The Rambam here is referring to what we call omniscience, where God is all-knowing. He knows our actions. He knows our speech. He knows our thoughts. Scary for most of us. Yes, but it's not just of human beings. God knows us of all of his creatures. It shouldn't come to you as a shock. The entire Torah are narratives showing God's awareness of our behaviors, of our speech, and of our thoughts. It starts at the very beginning with Adam and Eve in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden. God becomes aware, not becomes, but God is aware of what they do. God is aware that what they're thinking in terms of hiding from God. You have a generation with Noah and the flood where God is aware of all of the misdeeds and misbehaviors of that generation, the sinfulness of Sodom and Gomorrah. And you have an entire Torah consistently showing us how God is aware and knows what's going on. We come to grips with this in our Rosh Hashanah liturgy. There are various places throughout the service on Rosh Hashanah where we make reference to this. Ata zocher ma'aseh olam. We say that God, you remember all the deeds of the world, and you are mindful of all that has been formed. All secrets are revealed before you, and a multitude of mysteries since the beginning of time. There is no forgetting before your throne of glory, nor is there a thing hidden from your eyes. Nothing escapes you. You remember every deed, and no creature is concealed from you. God is aware of everything. Seems simple enough. And we can just move on to number 11, right? The problem is that this really begs for a much clearer explanation. We could suffice and just leave it on a superficial level to say, okay, God is aware, God knows. Okay, pass the mac and cheese. But what goes hand in hand with this concept is something we call hashgacha pratit, divine providence. You see, what we're going to find with principle number 10 and 11, they really go together. There is a certain concept. We're going to talk more 11 when we get there, but understand that the fact that God is aware of it is not the end of the story. Because the fact that God is aware and responds based on our actions, based on our thoughts, based on our speech. This concept of divine providence is probably one of the largest all-encompassing concepts that we have to explore on various levels. Let me introduce it with the following. The Talmud in Brachot on 4b makes an interesting discussing about a prayer that we're all familiar with. The prayer is known, we call it Ashrei, the Ashrei prayer. In the technical term is really Tehillah, because the first word is really not Ashrei. For those who have had the privilege of looking through the book of Psalms, which is where this comes from, the last sentence or two from the previous Psalm is where the words Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha come from. The new paragraph really begins with Tehillah le David, which is a praise to King David, and it goes on. But the Talmud says regarding that prayer of Ashrei, Kol ha'omer Tehillah le David b'chol yom shalosh pe'amim. Whoever recites this psalm of Tehillah le David three times every single day, muftachlo, it is assured that for that person, shehu ben olam haba, that is somebody who will merit to have the world to come, will be rewarded in the world to come. What does this prayer have anything to do with earning a reward? I mean, listen, I get it. It's a relatively sing-songy kind of psalm, but you can do that for so many of them. What makes this so unique? So the Talmud recites two reasons for it. One is that it contains all the letters of the alphabet. It goes in order. Even the right Tehillah LeDavid starts with an introduction and it says, Aromimcha Hashem. And then you have the Bet, and then the Gimel, and then the Dalet. There's one letter that's missing. That's the letter Nun. We'll save it for another time. But the Talmud says that since it goes according to the entire letter, all the letters of the alphabet, it has a certain stature and it's a very important prayer. But then the Talmud says something even more. The Talmud says that there's one verse in the Ashrei prayer that stands out above the rest. And that's the verse, Poteach et yodecha umasbia l'chol chai ratzon. That it's an acknowledgement that God, you open up your hand, Poteach et yodecha, you open your hand and you satisfy the needs of the wants of all of your creations. You, God, provide what every single creature in this universe needs to survive. It doesn't necessarily find it on its own. You provide it. This sentence that you provide each of them with their sustenance is how the Talmud explains the significance of this psalm. Why is that so significant? Okay, so God provides the needs. What it is an acknowledgement that every creature has a certain level of divine providence that oversees it. This is not God who then appoints a committee to go take care of his needs. Okay, these group of angels, you go deal with the cows. This group of angels, you go deal with the horses. And God oversees all of it. Now, don't jump to conclusions because this is a large conversation. But there is some kind of divine providence that oversees and provides the needs for every single creature. Another piece of Talmud tells us that no person as so much as bruises his finger, or in our terminology, stubs their toe without it already being ordained and decreed from above. There is nothing that happens in our world that escapes the eyes, ears, and acknowledgement of God. There are no accidents. Rabbi Kosman fans out there, there are no coincidences. This is the principle upon which Rabbi Kosman of blessed memory referred to. Everything is under the watchful eye of God. The greatness of Psalms in general is the fact that King David, he displays his unwavering faith in divine providence in all circumstances. And he understands who responds to his prayer with compassion and salvation. We could spend an entire class talking about, under this principle, why prayer helps. What the efficacy of prayer is because it's an acknowledgement that there is nothing in my life that is excluded from divine providence. But how does it work? What levels does it work on? This is the topic of tremendous, tremendous amount of literature. And what we'll do, I'll do my best to try to present it in general terms. So it seems simplistic. Okay, God watches, but it's anything like that. I cannot tell you why certain things happen the way they do and why a particular item happens or incident happens to a particular person. It's not because I don't know it or I'm not sharing it with you. It's because we are not privy to that. Once again, one of our earlier principles is that the human comprehension is limited. And why a specific action or event or occurrence happens to a specific person, we are not necessarily privy to. But in general terms, this is an attempt to understand the general principles by which God runs the world. When he provides that providence, how does it work? You will see that this intersects with so many other large concepts in Judaism, from free will, the fact that we make choices, to the fact that I can do repentance and undo a choice that I made. It will talk about the idea of taking responsibility, being rewarded for my choices, or God forbid, punished. Talks about when is that punishment or reward given out in a world to come. This is the beginning of a very large topic. Let's put it in simple terms. What does the word hashgacha, we call it hashgacha pratit, which means divine providence. What does the word hashgacha mean? So, okay, very good. You throw it back. It means providence. Thank you. But what it means is supervision. Somebody who works for a kosher organization that supervises, he or she is called a mashgiach, the one who supervises and is watching to make sure that things are done a certain way. So God created the world as a place where there's a goal, there's a mission. God didn't do it out of boredom, but he created everything and everyone to play a role in a grand master scheme. Well, if there's no inspection and there's no supervision, all heck breaks loose. So God did not let it go on its own, but rather there's a divine overseeing, a supervision that goes over. Now, any level of supervision really has two facets to it. The first is to observe the object of one's supervision. You got to make sure to assess the matter, understand what's going on with it. You have to watch. The second aspect is a result of the first, meaning you have to then decide after seeing and watching, you then have to decide how to respond and what to do based on the observation. Hence, this is the combination of principles 10 and 11. 10 is telling us that God is overseeing it, and 11 will be God responding to it. It's no different. There are these two aspects. God firstly watches us. He sees and knows all. And then based on God's observation and knowledge and what he sees us do, he will act accordingly. That's stage one in terms of understanding this. Now, does this apply to every creature the same, equally? So the truth is that the sages point out, and I apologize because I'm clearly oversimplifying it, but just to present it as an overview, there are basically two kinds of divine supervision, divine providence. It's granted to all of mankind, humankind on one level, and the rest of the world, the rest of nature and creation is on a different level. Again, mankind we'll talk about separately. We'll do that second, but the rest of the world, the rest of nature, and I'm not separating Jew and Gentile here. I'm separating mankind from animals, plants, everything else in the universe. There's something called Hashgacha Klalit, which means general providence, where yes, it is under the watchful eye of God, and God is making sure that things are done appropriately, but not necessarily to each individual item under his purview. Let me explain. I'll give you an example. If you have, let's say, cows, let's talk about cows. God has a certain level of divine providence to ensure that the species as cows continues to exist. Why? Because God in his infinite wisdom has a plan what role cows play in this master scheme. I, Tzvi Tachman, don't know what it is, other than it provides me a delicious Shabbos meal, but in somehow, some way, God has a plan for cows. But is Betsy the cow under God's direct purview to watch and to have providence over Betsy the singular cow? The answer is no. It is a general providence. God oversees it, so to say, the destiny of cows is under God's watchful eye. I want to be careful here. Let me use a better word. I had it written down here. One second. There's a better word. Yes. The supervision may not be direct, but his awareness is 100%. I want to clarify that. The fact that God is aware of everything is 100% complete. What Betsy does is under God's awareness. But what Betsy does, Betsy the cow does, in terms of the grand scheme of things, and does it warrant God's actual supervision of her individually as a cow? That the answer is no. I'm drawing a distinction between supervision and awareness, because I cannot, based on everything we've already established, I cannot limit God's awareness. But I can tell you that God doesn't, so to say, isn't as concerned with the supervision over other creatures as he does over mankind. Mankind is privy to an even more refined supervision of where it's individualized. And this is where our sages draw a massive distinction between hashgacha klalit, which means a general supervision, making sure that the species does not go extinct, or, for that matter, if God decides for the species to become extinct. But it's on a global scale. It's not on an individual, animal by animal, plant by plant. That is not that necessarily God guiding their evolution or guiding, maintaining their numbers, or that's only in the general sense, making sure that the species is sustained. But each individual creature, other than mankind, does not get that same level of divine supervision. Now, it's supervision versus awareness. In the non-human world, God's supervision is general, in that these things only fulfill the purpose of their existence as a general species, not as a specific cow or as a specific rabbit or as a specific peach tree. One cow versus another is inconsequential in this conversation. I'm not dissing any animals. I'm just presenting that the concern and supervision that God gives to the creature is not of the same caliber as God gives to a human being. In the totem pole of life, in the totem pole of all of the universe, man is at the top. And again, I don't mean man versus woman, because any man will tell you that the woman is definitely on top. There's no question about that on the totem pole. What I mean is mankind. This is already told out from the very beginning. At the end of the 6 days of creation, after everything is created, God turns to Adam and he says, I want you to have mastery. You will hold the keys to this universe. You will either take care of it properly, or it will be your fault if everything falls apart and you abuse it. You have the right to use, not abuse. It's for that reason why the Torah does permit eating animals. You may choose on your own to say that's not for me, but not because it's a prohibition. The Torah does allow it because a human life is considered on a higher level than an animal life. And it plays itself out in this concept as well. God's divine supervision over creatures is not the same as it is when it comes to people. We, as mankind, are privy to what's called hashgacha pratit, which means specific, detailed, individualized supervision. Now, okay, you're getting the concept, but I don't know if you're really understanding the ramifications of that. God created a planet. God created a universe that has a mission. That's why God created it. As I said before, mankind was put at the helm of running it and making sure that it is being utilized properly. Again, used, not abused. We have no right to do anything to any creature or to anything in God's beautiful world that is not to promote something within humanity. No human being should cause any kind of abuse, shouldn't waste resources, shouldn't kick and pluck flowers if it's not for a purpose. How many times I would stop campers from just walking along and just ripping leaves off a tree. Why? I don't know. Well, you shouldn't do that. Why? Because it's not serving a function. It has a function. God created it, But if it's not being utilized to enhance mankind and humanity, you have no right to abuse it. Use, not abuse. But we cannot deny the fact that mankind is at the top of the line. And therefore, if for all of man, if all of creation has some level of divine supervision, albeit in a general sense, man having the important role of being at the center of it, making sure that things are being utilized properly, has an additional layer, and therefore it's individualized supervision. It's an individual one-on-one. Each individual human being is given things in their life and supervised by God, and is given challenges and is given talents and abilities towards the destiny he or she was born for. Not in the generic sense of a species that needs to survive, but you individually have your own divine supervision that corresponds specifically to what your talents and objectives in life are. Humans, quoting from the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, the great, great, great scholar, he says, humans are not just given their due based on their membership in the species, but are supervised independently on an individual basis. Their actions are judged individually, and God makes appropriate decrees upon them as individuals. I think I'm going to pause here. I don't know where the time goes, but I'm going to pause here and we will revisit this because there's definitely more to talk about in this concept. But let me open it up to a few questions if you have any. Great. Let me get off the phone now. Great.
But a comment that this ties in with our earlier class on Torah when we were talking about counting. And we were talking about individuals and how each person was counted because each person was unique.
Correct. You are correct, John. I try to stay consistent in my messages because I have people like you that come to everything and they just totally show all my contradictions. So I try to stay consistent. Dr. E, you're chomping at the bit. Hold on.
Rabbi T.
Okay, what, Doc? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the concept of the human, from what I understand, is that one of a supervisor of God's Bria.
Yes.
That we are supervised, and in turn, we are expected to supervise the Bria, and we are not to abuse it because God may not decide to repair what we've abused.
That is correct. We have been made custodians.
That has a profound implication.
Yeah, we are the custodians of this world. We are in charge. I like your analogy of that God supervises us because he gives us the responsibility to supervise the world and the universe. I like it. Rena. Oh, scared her off.
I'm here. Doesn't Rambam have the opinion that there are angels controlling constellations that control different nations, but God controls the constellation that controls the Jews?
So you got to be very careful with that. That there is a concept, and it ties into this whole idea. The Gemara says, "Ein mazal li Yisrael." There's no, and again, for lack of a better word, everybody translated as luck, but we've already established that's not. The word mazal means that flow of energy. Remember we talked about that? The constellations and stuff. Yeah, the world at large is controlled by quote unquote natural. Now, Rena, know this, but I think everybody should be made aware. Judaism does not believe that nature, what we call the natural order of things here in the world, that the sun rises and that, you know, there's winter and summer, that it runs by itself. We've established that nature is just another word for God's daily activity. But it's God. Are there things that are delegated through, quote, the natural system, whether they be angels or otherwise? The answer is yes. But the Jewish people have an ability It's an ability. It's not a guarantee, but it's an ability to leapfrog over the system and to go straight to the source itself. That's God. That's true. That's what you're referring to. So yes, there is a concept of God supervising the divine providence in a general term over all species, over everything other than mankind. Mankind has a specific divine providence over it, and the Jewish people have the key to the back door, is how I'll explain it. We have the ability to leapfrog the system, but that's already a further step down the road. I'm trying to keep it in general terms so we can get the picture. Robin.
This is not going to be a short answer, so you can sort of table it to another time. And maybe you're going to respond to this in one of the other principles. But, you know, I wanted to know how this fits in with free will.
Yeah, we're going to get there. There's no way I'm getting through 13 principles of the Rambam and not talking about free will. I'm trying to reserve it for where I think it's most appropriate, but this is definitely tied into it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Okay.
We're going to come to it. I see it more in 11 than I do 10.
Okay, yeah, I know. 10, 11, we're getting there, I know. Okay.
We have to. It's a critically fundamental concept that we must understand. But for tonight, my goal was really to present to you the fact that in principle number 10, that God knows and is aware of things, means that there's a providence, that God is watching and supervising. My point being that it's not all one and the same, and that the whole universe and everything within it is all on the same level. There's at least two levels, a generic supervision, which is over everything else, and mankind has a individualized, specific divine providence. That's my main message for tonight. All right. We'll pick this up again tomorrow night, folks. Have a great night.